Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Our focus is on school safety and how we make our schools safer. I'm looking to keep all the guns out of the hands of the individuals that should not have them.
I come today wearing several hats. First, as a gun violence survivor who 7 years ago, as a 20-year-old, only 2 years older than many of the students at Parkland, had to hold the head of his boss after she was shot in the head.
We were not really thinking the same. With Mike Pompeo, we have a very similar thought process. I think it's going to go very well. Rex is a very good man. I like Rex a lot. I really appreciate his commitment and his service.
His statements on Russia have been good. He acknowledges Russia played a role. He agrees with the assessment of the intelligence community.
Joining us to talk about protecting Arizona schools, Tempe's vote on so-called dark money, and more are David Lujan, former lawmaker and currently director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress, and Lorna Romero, former communications director for Senator John McCain and currently the vice president of communications at Molera Alvarez. Welcome to you both. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Lorna, let me start off with you. So Governor Ducey has offered a list of possibilities for protecting Arizona schools. He's going to make it much more formal on Monday. Are you surprised at all that he has taken the lead on this? People have kind of called for it, and he has seemed to have been a bit tentative about it, but seems to be jumping in now.
I'm not surprised whatsoever. I think what we've seen from Governor Ducey the past few years is when there's a major issue that the state needs to face, whether it's controversial or not, he's going to bring the stakeholders together and he's going to address it. So we saw that recently with the opioid epidemic. He brought in stakeholders from both sides of the aisle and they were able to pass, you know, a bipartisan package. And so what's happened recently with the school shooting in Florida, and there has been a tremendous outcry. We recently saw students, you know, visit his office wanting to speak with his staff about this. He's taking this very seriously. And I think for him, it's something personal. He has children, you know, and I'm sure that he and his wife are concerned about the safety of all children in Arizona and in the United States, you know, in general. So is this going to be an easy issue? No. Are Republicans going to be happy with his proposal? Probably not. Are Democrats going to be happy? No. But I think that's a good starting point. I think we're going to be surprised what he comes up with on Monday, and I think it's going to be a good starting point for conversation in the state.
David, what about the politics of this? There have been some Democrats who are a little bit concerned that Randy Freese, lawmaker, had proposed something that may have been similar, at least to some of what the governor has been saying. And, of course, Democrats didn't get a hearing on this. Is there a concern there that we may see politics in this? Even if there's an agreement with the governor, we may see some asking for favors, or maybe we're not going to quite support that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the governor is obviously feeling the pressure on this issue. I think that's because he hasn't shown much of an appetite in the past to try and address this. So I think now he's doing that, which is good. But it's going to be an uphill battle because, as you mentioned, the bill that Representative Freese introduced didn't even get a committee hearing. And we're talking about a legislature that has, you know, in the past passed, you know, legislation allowing guns in bars and restaurants and in universities and different places. So this is a legislature that has been very reluctant or basically opposed in all instances to do any sort of gun control. So it's going to be an uphill battle.
Lorna, you mentioned the opioid epidemic. And earlier this session, they had the special session dealing with that. And there was a lot of sort of good feeling coming out of that, that Democrats and Republicans were able to work together. There was some optimism that that might continue on throughout the session. I think you're right to say that guns are probably not the issue to really bring everybody together. But can you see a situation in which Democrats and Republicans could find some common ground on this?
I'm going to sound Pollyannish right now, but yes, I do. And I think to point on or to piggyback on what David was saying, we're in an election year. So even if you do have a scenario where there are some Democrats that look at his plan on Monday and say, this looks pretty good, you're going to have to balance that with politics as well, because are some of them going to want to be outspoken and vocally support the governor right now when they're supporting his opponent? That's one element of it. And I think that that's a disservice to the state, in all honesty. I say if they see the plan on Monday and it's a good starting point and they actually want to make some progress in the state, work with the governor. I mean, the fact that he's been vocal about this and he's going to be introducing a plan on Monday is a big deal. There's one thing, and this is Arizona, we have a Republican legislature. It's one thing to have a Democrat introduce a bill and it doesn't get a hearing. It's another thing for the governor to make a public stance and make a proposal and have that as a starting point. So I think it would do everyone well for Republicans and Democrats to take it seriously and not have politics involved in this.
David, I want to ask you about the timing of this, because we're coming up to the what is traditionally the end or the beginning of the end of the legislative session. And this is a really big issue that lawmakers are just going to start diving into now. As Lorna said, it's an election year. Typically, legislators want to get out of session so they can go start their campaigns and everything. How do you think that might play into what happens and what might ultimately come out of this?
It definitely complicates things. I mean, you've already had most bills have already gone through the committee process. And so you know, you're going to have to kind of change the legislative schedule in order to address this issue. And as Lorna said, it's really going to take leadership by the governor to really try and push this issue through the legislature.
And David, what about budget concerns? I'm looking at the list of what the governor tweeted out. One of those is increased school resource officer and law enforcement presence at schools, also increased mental and behavioral health resources at schools. That sounds like some things would have to be added to the budget. Does that complicate things as well?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was a school principal here in Central Phoenix for 4 years and 1,200 students on one campus, kindergarten through high school, and I often thought about the school safety and what we needed to do to protect our students on campus. And a lot of those issues come down to investments in school funding, you know, whether it's having additional aides who can be at all the different entrances and exits to the schools, having school counselors. You know, Arizona has the lowest ratio of students to school counselors, school psychologists. All of this comes back to the issue that we've been talking about in Arizona for a while, and that is our schools today have $1 billion less today than they had a decade ago. And so, you know, this is really a school funding issue when you talk about school safety. And so what people have been saying, where's the governor's plan to reinvest in our schools? Because that's where the school safety issues really come in.
Lorna, when the governor is looking to put something together, how does he sort of, I don't want to say prioritize, but how does he sort of juggle what different stakeholders will say that they want? Because you've talked about school resource officers. There's a lot of students who say, we don't want armed police officers in our school. So how does, you know, as somebody who is trying to be the leader on this and put forward a plan, how do you juggle all these sort of competing interests and put together a plan that can, in theory at least, win a majority support in the legislature?
No, and that's a good point. And mind you, I never worked for Governor Ducey. I worked for a former governor who tackled a number of controversial issues as well. But that's one of the things, and I think where you saw this with his series of tweets the other day, is he's been doing a listening session. He's brought in a number of different stakeholders to just voice their concerns and their opinions. And so I think what he and his staff have done, they've really laid out what are all the issues and concerns and what can we do practically in Arizona and actually get accomplished this session. So that's why I think you're going to see a combination of things that Republicans will typically like and maybe some Democrats. I think it's going to be a combination of all of it. Is everyone going to be happy? No. But that's typically what happens in the legislative process. You have to reach a compromise. And is this going to be, you know, the package that fixes all issues? Probably not. But as I'm saying, it's a good starting point. It's a good conversation to have. But it is a delicate balance of, you know, you have interests on one side and interests on the other. And, you know, and as you mentioned, there's budget constraints as well. So if we're talking about, you know, school resource officers or counselors and, you know, additional support services for students, that's an investment. So where are you going to find those resources? What are you going to take resources from, et cetera? So but clearly this is a priority of his. And I believe that the governor and his staff, they're going to do whatever it takes to make it happen. Mm-hmm.
Lorna, let's change up. Let's go to the city of Tempe now. We're actually in the city of Tempe, but you know what I mean. The Tempe voters decided that they don't want, the headline basically is they don't want dark money in city elections. So we can define what dark money is. I know that's certainly an R versus D kind of issue. How significant do you think it is, though, the Tempe voters by a 9-to-1 margin? Yeah, we can add up how many voters that actually is, but they enthusiastically said, yeah, let's know who is putting money into these elections.
So, you know, I've been seeing all the headlines, 9-to-1, 91% of Tempe voters. I mean, when you have a question that says, do you want dark money in elections, yes or no, I think it's going to be pretty simple what the response is going to be.
Was dark money in quotes, though? That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, you know, when you have something that's framed in that way, same thing with clean elections. That passed overwhelmingly. But when you actually talk to, you know, the voters about, do you want your taxpayer dollars to fund someone's campaign, I'm sure they would have a different reaction. So I think some of it is a general lack of understanding. Do I think that this is going to be some kind of like rude awakening for the state? No, not necessarily. It's the city of Tempe. They have a tendency to vote in a certain direction. But what I think this is going to cause is, you know, this whole idea, I know the city of Phoenix is considering this as well, this whole like patchwork of different laws when it comes to campaign finance reporting. And I personally think that needs to be an issue that's resolved at the state level. To have 91 different cities and towns coming up with their own rules and regulations, I think is just ridiculous. This is something that the state needs to address. I understand that some cities don't like the direction that the state's going in, but I think that's the proper venue for this conversation, not the ballot box at every municipality.
Well, and David, given the fact that the state is considering a law, the legislature is, that would essentially tell cities like Tempe, you're not allowed to do specifically this, how impactful might this vote actually end up being?
Well, I think where the real impact's going to come is in November, because, you know, there is a ballot initiative, a statewide ballot initiative, to try and put a similar issue on the ballot to regulate dark money in Arizona. And I actually think that the Tempe vote is reflective of what a lot of Arizonans want to see. They want to see more transparency in our elections and want to see where the money is behind these things. And the one example I would cite is the, you know, ads that we see constantly running right now on education funding in Arizona and, you know, how great it is to be a teacher in Arizona. And I think people really want to know, and we do know because that's a transparent issue of who's behind those issues. But, you know, it's not, you would think, well, when you hear, oh, it's so great to be a teacher in Arizona, that the people behind this are educators or people that are actually in classrooms. But in fact, it's people who are not in classrooms. It's organizations that have their own interests, and it might not necessarily be the right interests that, you know, so people want to know those types of issues.
That's David Lujan. Also here is Lorna Romero. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Mark Brody. We'll continue our conversation on the NewsCap right after this. Happy Friday morning. It's the show on KJZZ. We're in the midst of our Friday NewsCap segment with Lorna Romero, former communications director for Senator John McCain, currently the vice president of communications at Molera Alvarez. Also here is David Lujan, former lawmaker and currently director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Lorna, let's go national. There was a huge Pennsylvania congressional race that got a tremendous amount of attention. It was a district that President Trump won by about 20 points in 2016, and the Republican candidate narrowly lost in this race. Mm-hmm. How significant do you think that is? And is there anything similar going on in Arizona we should watch for, a race that may give us an indication whether the president is popular here or not?
So I think that there's kind of been an overreaction about the significance of this race, just because I think people have a tendency to say there's a Republican running for re-election and they're tied to Donald Trump somehow. And so this is a reflection of how people feel about the president. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think it comes down to the individual candidate themselves. Am I an expert on Pennsylvania politics? By no means am I. But from all indications, he may have not been the strongest Republican candidate to win. Was it a close race? Yes. Did the Democrat end up being successful? Correct. Do I think that that's reflective of the national scene or what's happening in Arizona? I don't think that's fair to say. Arizona is completely different. Texas is completely different. Louisiana is completely different than the politics in Pennsylvania. And so I think this generalization of, oh, what happens here is a, you know, referendum on Donald Trump and Republicans, is an overreaction. I think what Republicans need to focus on this election cycle is just their individual races and their platforms, and specifically their state, and not this national noise that we continue to hear that's been going on since 2015 about what's the Donald Trump impact on Republicans.
But Lorna, could it be a referendum on the president without being a referendum on the broader Republican Party? Is there still that possibility of a divide there? We could say, well, you know, people still want to identify with Republicans, but maybe not a Trump Republican.
You know, I think you could make that argument, but as well, I go back to 2016 when I worked for Senator John McCain on his campaign. The question was always, how does Donald Trump on the top of the ticket, you know, impact John McCain? My argument was always, it doesn't. It doesn't matter who's on the top of the ticket. John McCain is John McCain, and he's running his own race, and he's his own person and candidate. And so I think that's this generalization that just because you're an R and someone's mad at Donald Trump, they're going to take it out on you. No, these candidates just really need to establish themselves as independent candidates. You can agree with Donald Trump and you know, on certain issues. Of course, you're Republicans. You're going to agree on certain issues together. But that doesn't mean that you as a candidate are beholden to what the president has said. So no, I think that's an unfair assessment.
David, obviously Arizona will have a special election coming up in just a few weeks. Do you think that there is anything that the Democrats can take from the Pennsylvania election, understanding that they're different candidates, different place? Is there anything that Democrats can take from that to run in another very, very conservative-leaning district?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you're referring to the special election in CD8, which is, you know, albeit that is a very, that's a long shot for a Democrat to win that race. But I think if you see that the gap is much closer than what it's been in the past, I think that is a strong indication that that's going to carry over into other races in Arizona. And I think what the difference is that we're seeing in Alabama and Virginia and other states is the level of mobilization that I haven't seen at this level in all of my years in politics. You know, 2010, we saw the Tea Party, and we saw, you know, that. But I think, you know, looking at Arizona just in particular, you know, all the different types of activism. So last year we saw, you know, parents organize against school vouchers, you know, gathering over 100,000 signatures in 75 days. You saw the pushback against the attempt to appeal Obamacare, the DACA students, you know, what we're seeing today with guns in schools and the teachers and the Red for Ed. There, you're seeing it across a different variety of different issues and a lot of different groups. And so that's the kind of mobilization I think that's going to make a lot of difference in races this year.
Lerner, you made a great point about how Senator McCain is so well known that love him or hate him, everyone knows who he is. Let's talk briefly about the Senate race we're going to see this time around to take Senator Flake's seat at this point. So we've got three Republicans who are very unique characters in some sense. So people expect Martha McSally to win that race. Now, she has had that sort of pivot of how closely does she align with President Trump. Now, people we think know Kyrsten Sinema. She's been a member of Congress. We're not really sure if the broader electorate knows much about McSally or Sinema. So does that mean, now that, again, taking into account McCain as a separate entity there, how much could McSally be affected by Trump?
So I think this is a good point because, you know, Senator McCain, 100% name ID in the state of Arizona. He'd been in elected office for a while. And now you have two who we think are the two front runners from the Republican and Democrat side for the Senate race that are probably known in their individual districts but not statewide. This is their opportunity to define themselves. And they really need to do that on a statewide basis and let it be known who they are as a candidate. And I think you're starting to see that with Martha McSally. She's been out and about a little bit more. Kyrsten Sinema, I think we've seen her kind of tone it down a little bit. I mean, who wants to talk about Trump, in all honesty? And I think we've seen that in this election cycle. No one really wants to talk about it because at the end of the day, that's not the main issue in Arizona, and it shouldn't be. And I know that it's a political play on some part by the Democrats. They want to force the Republicans to say, are you with the president or with you not? Or, you know, and vice versa. And I think that's unfair for the voters of Arizona who actually need to get to know who these candidates are. So my advice to them is let everyone know who you are. And it doesn't have to be about the president and you know, and what he's doing on the national level. Just talk about you and your platform.
How do candidates try to avoid nationalizing elections? I mean, you see so many ads on the Republican side. You see, you know, images of used to see of President Obama. You see images still of Nancy Pelosi. Mm-hmm. On the Democratic side, they show attack ads, you know, showing Paul Ryan or Mitch McConnell. How do candidates try to avoid their races becoming national and keep them to the issues relative to their district or, in a Senate case, in their state?
It really comes down to retail politics. And this is one of the great things that John McCain did. He traveled the state constantly. You know, this is what I would always say. I would read an article in Politico or on the Hill that said something negative about John McCain or how close the race was, and I'd get upset. And then I'd really think about it. Are the voters in Yuma reading this? No, they're not. Are the people in Prescott reading the Hill? They're not. But John McCain was there and talking to them face to face and meeting with their local press and their elected leaders. And that's what really matters. And so I know we always hear all this noise on the national level, but we're stuck in this bubble. So we all hear it who are in this industry and involved in it. But when it comes to the general voting public, they're not aware of that. But if you're in their community and you're talking about the issues important to them, that's what resonates with them.
And David, speaking of noise at the national level, in our last couple of minutes, the president's always making some sort of noise. We heard that clip from him earlier where it was the noise of a helicopter behind him, and he was explaining why he got rid of Rex Tillerson to some extent. How significant is that? You know, we always see cabinet changes, and sometimes there's overreaction, but this does seem like 14, 15 months into the presidency, these are some major changes. Does that concern you?
Yeah, it's very scary. I mean, I think it scares all of us. I mean, you know, look at how many cabinet changes we've seen and how many more are we going to see in the next few weeks? I mean, you already have a list of people that people are speculating are going to be leaving. And you know, I just know in offices that I've worked at, when you have one person missing, you know, one person, you know, vacancy, you know, that puts a stress on the rest of the office. We're talking about our White House, our national government. And, you know, when you have that many key cabinet level positions, it really is frightening for us.
Lorna, should people be scared when they say that President Trump says something along the lines of he's getting the cabinet he wants? Should that scare the American public?
I would say
it's only been 10 months.
I don't think it should scare people, but I do think that there's a proper way to handle whether it's a resignation or a termination. At the end of the day, it's up to the president who's going to be in his cabinet. And I understand that if there's differences of opinion and it's not going to lead to the policies that he wants, that's his discretion to let someone go. I think it's the way that it's being handled creates a lot more chaos than what's necessary. There always needs to be a smooth transition, especially in a position such as Secretary of State, to make sure that there's no internal or external questioning or chaos, and I just feel like it should have been handled in a completely different way.
Do these two positions at this point in time, given potential talks with North Korea, dealing with stuff with the Russians, we're talking about a new CIA director, are these two positions that are now or will soon be vacant, are those maybe, if you had to choose somebody to leave the cabinet, maybe those would not be the ones you would choose right at this moment?
I would agree with that assessment. This is not the time to have an interim director or somebody, you know, some undersecretary while these conversations are happening. And now you're going to have to go through a whole confirmation process. And we've already seen some folks are not too thrilled with some of his decisions. So,
yeah. David, final thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it really is, I guess Jared Kushner can probably take that job, too. I mean, give him more responsibility.
Or locally, Andy Tobin, I guess.
Right, yeah, that's a good point.
Guys, let's wrap it up with, you're both ASU fans, and I'm sorry to say that your team lost on Wednesday night, but you both had some fun last night with the defeat of U of A. So I'll give you 20 seconds to talk about that.
You know, yes, I was sad on Wednesday. I was happy yesterday, but as I mentioned to you guys off air, this was my first year in my bracket where I didn't have U of A losing in the first round, and they actually did, so... That was unfortunate.
It's always good to see the U of A lose.
David Lujan. David Lujan's a former lawmaker, currently director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress, and Lorna Romero, former communications director for Senator John McCain. She is currently the vice president of communications at Molera Alvarez. Guys, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the show continues. You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.